Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the festive voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Festive indeed. How are you, Matthew?
Not too shabby, Richard. How was your Christmas?
Delightful, thank you. It's a tier four Christmas this year, thanks to our friend Boris. So it was very nice. So very relaxed. Lots and lots of movies and very little else. How about yourself?
Yeah, pretty much the same. If I remember this time last year, we had a conversation about a rather shambolic Christmas dinner that you had. You now have a slightly different diet. Did you go back to the traditional Christmas dinner as per?
It was slightly different this year. No, it was lots of fish. No turkey, lots of fish this year. Fish. Yeah, so slightly different, but very, very enjoyable, I must say. How about yourself? Were you the traditional?
Definitely. Turkey, pigs in blankets, sausage meat, all your usual stuff. You'd expect no less, Richard.
Indeed. And that's going to be the subject of today's podcast, right? We're going to go into depth on Christmas and Christmas dinners.
Well, I'm waiting for you to somehow bring this back to goalkeeping. It's what you normally do.
Well, I'm just thinking, you haven't really given me any opportunity yet. I'm just thinking, you've mentioned stuffing, you've mentioned pigs in blankets. I could mention a goalkeeper or two there, but that wouldn't be particularly kind. So, no, it's going to be difficult. I don't know if you've got a way in which you can do it.
I think we should just get on with the show, shall we? We, of course, are doing this over the medium of Zoom. Like you said, it's tier four, so we can't be in our studios as per. But we'll get through it. We've done it before, so we shall do it again. Shall we get on with it, Richard?
Let's do it.
Right, not the usual complete fixture list that we're used to because some games were obviously called off, but we're going to rifle through what did occur over Boxing Day and a few bits before as well that we obviously didn't catch up on last time because of the fact that we didn't do the podcast on Christmas Eve. But we're going to start at Anfield, Richard. Liverpool 1, West Bromwich Albion 1, now under the leadership of Big Sam Allardyce. And Big Sam Johnston made an absolute worldy save towards the end of that game from Roberto Firmino. I cannot stop watching this. An absolutely brilliant save.
Yeah, phenomenal. Really was. When I saw it, and I'm sure a lot of people like me had that moment where it was that question, has he saved that? You know, and then you kind of stand up, you get that little bit closer to the TV and they show the replay from behind the goal. And there's that beautiful shot just by the post where you see it's nestling in the corner and the smallest of fingertips, which just takes it around the post. And we talk about making great saves at big moments. And how often do you see some of these great saves get lost because you lose the game or it's early in the game? But to make a save like that at Anfield and potentially a turning point for West Brom, you know, you consider now a couple of the results they've had lately against Man City, against Liverpool, to get this result in the way that they did. This is the kind of game that can turn a season. This is the kind of save for me that can turn a season. And it was phenomenal. You know, he's set well. He's got his positioning spot on, his set position spot on, and the reaction is brilliant. And the flexibility in order to get himself down to the left in the way in which he does and get it around the post. It is a truly fantastic save at a fantastic moment.
He is a really good goalkeeper, isn't he? This is a goalkeeper that we were looking forward to seeing in the Premier League. He had that long time with Manchester United, as he spoke about in our podcast. Then he had the spell with Aston Villa on loan. Then he went to West Brom, finally bagged a bit of permanent first team football with a club that he knew he was going to be playing at. And it wasn't an easy start to life in the Premier League, but he has adjusted and he's just been brilliant.
He has. Interestingly, I do speak to Gary Walsh from time to time, of course, is Sam Johnston's goalkeeper coach. And, you know, he's been saying for a long, long time just how good Sam Johnston is. Now, I do wonder, it was never going to be an easy position to fill, given that he was filling in for Ben Foster, of course. So when you're coming in for such a big name like that, such a big character, and of course, Ben is universally liked pretty much wherever he goes, I think it was always going to be difficult for a keeper to do that. But you've got to give him credit because over time, not only has he done it, and he had a few moments in the Championship last season when one or two question marks, but the way in which he's come into the Premier League this season, and again, they didn't have the easiest start. And again, there were one or two question marks. But what he's done over the last half a dozen games or so, you can see that he's just gone up a level. There's a certain belief in him now, it feels like, when you're watching him. And, you know, you get that sort of feeling when you watch certain keepers. Some people talk about it being their presence. That's the term that's often used. For me, I talk a lot about body language. And you can often see a goalkeeper that's in form without them necessarily doing anything. You know, if you watch a goalkeeper for long enough, you will get an impression. You will get a feeling as to how they're doing. And the more that I'm watching Sam, and certainly watching this game, you just felt that he looks very assured. You felt very comfortable with him being in goal. And I thought, look, it wasn't just a save. Again, it was a very, very good performance from him in general. But he is now doing, it is a bit of a cliche, but big saves in big moments. And it is something that we touched on before. Now, for me, I think there's a mentality, a real mentality that's associated with this. If you've got that kind of mentality where you are in the flow, you're in the zone, it's these kind of things that happen. And at the moment, we have to say it, he is arguably, out of the English goalkeepers, probably alongside Nick Pope, he is the in-form English goalkeeper right now.
Just want to touch on some comments that Sam Allardyce made after the game. Now, we talk about nitpicking a lot on this podcast, and perhaps that is what I'm going to do right now. But when I listened to Sam after the game, I just thought what he said was a bit weird. It just seemed like a few weird comments that he made when asked about the Sam Johnstone save. Now, he did say unbelievable save. He did say that Sam Johnstone was a top-class goalkeeper. But when the reporter said to him, you know, that one brilliant save, he went, only one? Yes, an unbelievable save. But only having to make one world-class save here when they're top of the league and we're at the bottom. Come on. We've done a brilliant job and the goalie's there to make that save if we need him. If we'd asked him to make 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 saves, they'd have probably won 4-0. Maybe 4-1. Who knows? I just thought that was a really weird thing for him to say.
Yeah, I fully understand what he's trying to do. And this, we've all had this. I think most goalkeepers have had this at some point when you, after the game, you're feeling, you expect your manager to come out and to be singing your praises over and over after a game. But of course, you've got to consider other things when he's being questioned about this. He wants to point out, of course, as the manager, that the team have done a fantastic job in getting a point to Liverpool, which, by the way, they did. I mean, there was a stat, wasn't there? More shots on target than Liverpool. First time that's happened to Liverpool at Anfield for however long. Look, there's a lot of positives about the performance. So what he's trying to do is trying to shift focus away from it being the Sam Johnstone show to being a very good performance from West Brom. So I understand what he's trying to do. I don't think he's necessarily done it in a fantastic way. And as you mentioned, got a little bit mixed up with his words to an extent. But I get what he's trying to do. But at the same time, the fact that he has credited the save, I mean, it'd be hard not to credit this save. He's just trying to shift focus back to the team as opposed to one individual.
Okay, moving on to the King Power. Leicester 2, Manchester United 2. Couple of moments in this one that I want to talk to you about. The first one is the first goal for Leicester from Harvey Barnes. It was the equaliser to equalise from Marcus Rashford's opener. Now, Glenn Hoddle said that David De Gea wasn't quick enough with his feet in getting across to this strike from Harvey Barnes. We had a tweet in as well from Jim Kavanagh that referred to Hoddle digging out David De Gea for not taking an early step to his right. Jim says, if he takes an early step to his right and the shot goes in the opposite corner, then Hoddle will dig him out for taking the step. I'm not a fan of De Gea, but I don't think he was even a little at fault there.
I'd agree with that tweet. I think, again, it's one of these for me that's dangerous territory. Is it savable? Potentially. You know, the only thing I'd say, and I paused it at a point of impact, and you could argue that maybe he could be half a yard deeper, maybe he could be a foot to his right, given the position that it's being struck from. That's, and again, you're kind of gauging this on what the likelihood is of the movement of the ball, which way it's likely to spin, if any. And obviously, this type of strike, he's going to drive the ball in the way he did. So you're going to get very little spin. So with that being the case, there might be a slight argument to be a foot to your right. But again, this is the ultimate of nitpicking. And I think then if you do that, you don't take a step to your right. You are in that set position ever so slightly to your right. And if you're there, then potentially you make the save. But of course, with every positive, there is a negative. So that then means, as you've just touched on, it might be that he gets beaten to his left far too easily. So look, it's one of them that I think we've got to be very, very careful. It's a fantastic strike. It's gone past him before he's really able to move. You know, we're talking not even a second, talking 0.3 of a second or whatever it would have taken in order to get by him. So I think we do need to be very, very careful with the analysis. Certainly no error. Does a keeper save it? Again, if a goalkeeper has a slightly different position, then yes, potentially. But again, David De Gea's style, if anybody's going to save this, ordinarily you'd say this is the type of shot that David De Gea might save or would be in a position to save given the explosivity that he has.
Okay, at the opposite end, Kasper Schmeichel made one heck of a save from Marcus Rashford. Now, this isn't too dissimilar, I think, from the chance we spoke about with Rashford at the London Stadium a couple of weeks ago, where I said he should have scored and he hit the post. On this occasion, I don't think you're going to like the fact that I do think Marcus Rashford should have scored. I'm going to go into the classic cliche of not taking anything away from the goalkeeper and that save. But in my opinion, Marcus Rashford has to score there. We did have a tweet from Stephen Waite, who said, how good was the Kasper Schmeichel save from Marcus Rashford? What a hand. Definitely worth a mention on the podcast. I absolutely agree with that. And in commentary, Glenn Hoddle did eulogise Kasper Schmeichel and said, that is a phenomenal save. It is a phenomenal save. But should Marcus Rashford score there?
No. I mean, look, I think that, no, quite simply, I think Marcus Rashford is an excellent finish. You know, he's one-on-one with the goalkeeper. He's got himself away from the defender. The way he has created space, brilliant finish into what would have been the bottom corner, but it's phenomenal goalkeeping. I do think that beats the majority of Premier League goalkeepers, majority of goalkeepers across the world. So, look, I know what you're saying. If he tucks it right in the bottom corner, which, again, bear in mind, this is a shot from, what, 18 yards, give or take? So as much as you're saying, yeah, it should go in the corner, if anyone's having a shot and they have to put it in a postage stamp in the bottom corner, we're saying it's a fantastic finish. And effectively, that's what Kasper Schmeichel's made him have to do. He's pretty much put it in the corner as it is. But the fact is that Kasper Schmeichel's set position, being reasonably wide, hands where they are, and the strength that he's got in that hand, arm, shoulder, everything involved, it's a brilliant save. So for me, I would say good finish, but it's an even better save.
Okay, fine. That's one of those. I'm not saying that it wasn't a good save. I just do think that a striker in that position should be rifling that into the bottom corner. He did leather it, and Cameron P tweeted in and said, genuine question, do keepers train their forearms for stuff like this? For example, I know F1 drivers do stuff with weighted steering wheels so their forearms can cope with the load through the race. Is that something that goalkeepers do? Do you strengthen your forearms?
Yeah, I think that the realisation as well that the cliche would be strong wrists. But of course, that's only a very small part of the equation because it's quite a long lever. You then consider the whole arm. So as you mentioned, forearms, wrists, biceps, triceps, and more so the shoulder. So, you know, and I've sort of had a lot of firsthand experience of this with a lot of the shoulder work I did from the shoulder injuries that I had. And what you would tend to find is that the fitness coaches at these clubs would give a specific program to a goalkeeper, which would involve a lot of core strength and a lot of strength in the shoulders, the arms, etc. So it's not necessarily weights. It's not doing your bicep curls or your bench press. It will be doing a lot of things, for instance, planks, but planks on elongated arms or stuff. If you can picture this, you'd be up against a wall with a football on the wall and doing like different shapes on the wall, but with, again, your arm outstretched. So you're just working those small muscles within your shoulder, really focusing on strengthening that, because it's for moments like this where that ball hits you at pace like it does there. For a start, by the way, if he's not strong in his arms, that can cause injury. Like the pace on the ball hitting you like that, one, it can cause injury. Two, if you haven't got that strength, it just goes right through. You know, it's one of them where it grazes the hand, goes in the bottom corner. And we're saying he had no chance. But again, that will have been those countless hours in the gym that nobody sees, that nobody even thinks of, that allows him to make that kind of save.
Over to the Emirates, Arsenal 3, Chelsea 1. A surprise result, really, and a narrative shift, it seems, Richard, regarding Edouard Mendy. Let's talk about this because we saw the narrative with Kepa. We spoke about it numerous times on the podcast before. But before Chelsea's game, a few days prior to this game, where they convincingly beat West Ham, there was a segment done by Gary Neville where he highlighted a few of Mendy's misdemeanours, we'll say, in the games leading up to that one. In my opinion, it was content for content's sake, absolutely ridiculous. But one of the lines he said really struck a chord where he said, Edouard Mendy needs to have a mistake-free night tonight. This is a goalkeeper who was lauded when he stormed into life into the Premier League. And if you looked at Twitter after the defeat to Arsenal on Boxing Day, there was one particular line that a few people were throwing out, which said, oh, Mendy is showing his capabilities. What are your thoughts here?
Well, firstly, to touch on the segment that you mentioned about Gary Neville, I mean, I watched that myself and it was funny because I'm sure a lot of you guys as well listening in, if you're involved in goalkeeping groups, that spread like wildfire. It's like, what is this guy on? You know, bearing in mind that five things he showed, three of them weren't even errors. Two of them were great goals from memory. It was just very, very strange. But again, that's all part of it, right? They get built up to an extent to then get knocked down. Now, look, do I think that Mondi's been at the same level as those first few games? No, but I think it would have been very hard to continue that run. The number of clean sheets, he really did hit the ground running. And generally, I think he's been fine. And do you know what? Even in this game, and this is where it can be frustrating for a goalkeeper, because I thought generally he was fine in this game. No chance on the three goals. That goal that Saka got, there isn't a goalkeeper in the world that saves that. And I know he says he meant it. I'm still not having it. But there isn't a goalkeeper world that saves that. And the reason being that at the point at which the ball arrives to Mendy, it is so high and it drops at such a height and goes right in that top corner there's just nothing you can do. Nothing at all you can do, given where your starting position will be on what would ordinarily be a cross. So no fault whatsoever. The one black mark against his aim in this game was the pass towards the end when he's looked to play out. He hasn't quite connected with the pass out to the right back, which is the criticism of Mondi, which is that he's not incredibly good with his feet. Personally, I think he's sufficient enough, but this was one of those moments where you could see technically it wasn't a great pass out to the fullback. He got caught out, but in fairness, he makes a brilliant recovery save, gets himself back. He's quite calm in the situation, surprisingly calm, you could potentially say.
Can I just touch on that? Because that is something I don't think I've ever seen from a goalkeeper when they've given the ball away like that. He was so relaxed. It was almost like he hadn't done it. And maybe that is something we should give him huge credit for. Yes, it was a poor piece of footwork, but to then be so relaxed meant that he didn't hastily rush out of his goal. He didn't foul Lacazette. He didn't get sent off. He didn't give Lacazette an easy option. The fact that he was so relaxed made Lacazette, I don't know, attempt to chip him, which he then palmed away.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that he composed himself very, very quickly, got himself back and got himself into a very good position. And it is a brilliant save, by the way, because that's going right into the far corner and he manages to get himself across and make the top-hand save. So, yeah, at one point, you know, he hasn't quite executed that pass, which, of course, he's going to get criticised for, but you have to then give him credit for the second phase of play. But you're right, I do feel like the narrative is starting to shift slightly. It is an interesting time ahead for him. I think that, on the whole, it's been a very, very positive start to his life at Chelsea. But look, we've seen it elsewhere. It doesn't take long for it to shift, but similarly, it might not be long for it to shift back in a positive way, given the current situation he finds himself in. It's not one of them where you feel with a, I don't know, use a De Gea or a Pickford, for example, where they're having good game after good game, but it only take one mistake for a lot of the stuff to be brought up again, or people looking for things that aren't necessarily there. Like, Mondi isn't there, but again, this will be an interesting period of time coming up. Providing he can keep the high level that he's shown so far, then he'll be fine. And before we know it, it will be one where he builds the reputation that he wants to build. And we all know what it's like. Once you've got that reputation, it's hard to shift, good and bad. So I do think it's an interesting time coming up for him.
Also in that game, Bernd Leno saving a penalty from Jorginho. I think that's the third time that Jorginho's had a penalty saved this season now. And that suggests that maybe, just maybe, goalkeepers are wising up to that hop, skip and jump that he does. Maybe Bruno Fernandes will have to find a new way of taking penalties as well. We're going to talk a bit more about Arsenal goalkeepers at the end of the podcast, in particular, of course, Alex Runnerson and that error he made against Manchester City. We're going to talk a bit more about that because it's quite a big talking point, everything that's come as a result after that. But fair play to Leno for saving that penalty.
Yeah, excellent. Because look, he's under the spotlight as well at the moment, partly because of how well Martinez is doing at Aston Villa. Then naturally, the spotlight will be then shifted onto Leno because, of course, effectively, Arsenal chose Leno over Martinez. That's the, you know, ultimately, that's the crux of it. So, no, credit to him. I thought he was very good. I thought it was a very, very good penalty save. A crucial moment as well, because you feel that had he conceded there, it could have been a frantic last few minutes and you wouldn't have been surprised if Chelsea had got a leveler. But it's a very good save. Now, what I would say, you mentioned about the technique. I still stand by the technique that these guys are trying to do. I just don't think Jorginho is very good at it because he does the hop, skip and the jump. But if you watch the split second before he hits the ball, he looks back down at the football. Whereas the better ones, the Fernandes and these other guys, they're watching the goalkeeper. They don't need to look down in order to see where the football is. They know where the football is. But this is where I don't think his technique's that good because he goes too high, drops. He has to look at the football, which then we made this point in an earlier podcast where it doesn't actually make any logical sense in order to land from that kind of height in order to strike a ball. And this proves it because he has to look down at the football. So Leno very cleverly knows that as long as he doesn't move before he looks back down, then he's still got time to go early and make the save. Whereas the ones that are that little bit better at it, they don't have chance to move early. And I talk about the Ivan Tonys, the Lyle Taylors, the Fernandes, who do it brilliantly. I think it's as good as unsavable, but Jorginho just hasn't quite got the technique. But look, don't take anything away from Leno. It's a great save, an important save at a big moment. And again, look, I think he's having a good season. It's tough when the guy that left is having such a good season that naturally people will ask questions. But let's not take anything away from Leno. He's in a team that aren't performing at the moment. But I think on the whole, he's been very solid.
A couple of big goalkeeping talking points at Elland Road, Richard. It was Leeds 1, Burnley 0. But perhaps it should have been Leeds 1, Burnley 1. Ilan Meslier and Nick Pope. Let's start with the Nick Pope one first, where he gave away a penalty. We had a few tweets in from this one. Patrick Bamford, of course, converting the penalty. Philip Hawkins saying, terrible decision. Won the ball cleanly and decisively. Absolute shambles. Tony GK says, Pope won the ball. Peter Hucker says, anywhere else on the field, it's a free kick. So the ref is correct. Just because you are a keeper, it doesn't mean you can launch your body into someone. Mark Edwards said, can they be a bit braver and claim the ball with hands, leading like the good old days, take ball and player? And Spesh says, nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. Good, brave goalkeeping. I would be fuming if the ref gave that against me.
Okay, yes, some interesting tweets. I even put a tweet out myself, Matthew, because it was one that I watched it over and over. I'll tell you what it was for me. It was the fact that the commentators didn't even question it. Like, it was shown over and over again. And each time, yeah, it's an obvious penalty. And I'm like, it's not. I don't understand this. Like, and again, I appreciate that we are looking at it from a goalkeeper's point of view, but you could see Nick Pope was like, I've won the ball. Like, it was there. I've won the ball. Now, of course, you're going to clatter into me if you're running towards me, but I've won the ball. And the challenge is always going to be slightly different to that of an outfield player. I appreciate if you do that as an outfield player, it's going to be slightly different. But the point is, a lot of the time, you are making a shape in order to make a save, and it can look a little bit clumsy. For me, it's brilliant goalkeeping. And I was very, very frustrated to see it being given as a penalty. But I think this is a classic one where I think goalkeepers are going to have a very different perspective to strikers. So where we're getting these tweets in, I'd love to know, for those that thought it was a penalty, what position they play. I can't imagine there's a single goalkeeper out there that's watched that and says that should be a penalty. I'm 100% certain that every goalkeeper's watching that and saying that's harsh.
Yep, okay. I looked at that and thought, what else could Nick Pope do, really? If he went with his hands, he was potentially not in a better position. He made a very, very good challenge. Brilliant improvisation from Nick Pope. So it did seem like an odd decision. An even odder decision was the goal that never was for Burnley, the equaliser from Ashley Barnes. Ben Mee was adjudged to a fouled Elan Melier. Now, this went crazy on Twitter. There were a few tweets. Gary Lineker, of course, piping up, as he tends to. How's that a foul? Poor goalkeeping and poor refereeing. Presumably, he blew his whistle before it thumped into the back of the net. Not presumably. You could hear the whistle quite audibly. Otherwise, VAR would surely have overturned that decision. David James said, watching the replays of Barnes' disallowed goal, Melier doesn't appear to call. Where was VAR when I was playing? Brian de Groot said, for me, Ben Mee is not going to head that ball. Melier is getting there. Mee knew he was coming out and then turned his attention to the ball and jumped to make it difficult for the keeper, but wasn't going to play the ball. Foul, but I'll always take the keeper's side. And Vorney said exactly what happened. Ben Mee was trying to win the penalty by jumping back into him. It's fair to say that isn't the general consensus. Most people thought that it was more a foul by Melier on Mee rather than Mee on Melier.
Yeah, so this one's a fascinating one for me. And, you know, you touched on it. These are the two major decisions in the game. And I do feel that he got the two major decisions wrong, ultimately. Now, I don't think it's necessarily poor goalkeeping. I will say that. And people are probably listening in thinking, well, he's come for the ball, he's dropped it. Surely that constitutes poor goalkeeping. But for me, I love the fact that he's as positive as he is. And he is generally a very positive goalkeeper. So the fact he's coming for this, I think it's the right decision. We have to give credit to the finish, first and foremost, because where people say poor goalkeeping, I disagree, because it's very easy to say. I think it's right that he came. He didn't quite execute it, and that was because of Ben Mee being there. But I don't think it's a foul, but I don't think it's poor goalkeeping. I don't know if that even makes sense. But ultimately, that's the position I have with this. I do then think he should have played on, because personally, I don't think Ben Mee knew he was there. The reaction when he went down suggests that he didn't know he was there. So it's not one of them where, you know, we touched on the Harry Maguire, Jordan Pickford, where it's very, very blatant, in my opinion, and a foul was given for that a few weeks ago. For me, this was completely unintentional, and it's just one of them that it has broke, and it's a phenomenal finish. So I know you mentioned earlier it could have been Leeds 1, Burnley 1. There is an argument to say it could have been Leeds 0, Burnley 1. You know, genuinely, I think he's got both major decisions wrong. Do you know what? Actually, going back to the Nick Pope one very quickly as well, there was a really good example the day before. I don't know if you saw this, Matt. I haven't spoken to you about this, but the Matt Cash one, where he's gone in for a challenge, grazes the football, barely gets anything, and it wasn't given as a penalty. And yet Nick Pope gets loads of the ball and it was given, and yet neither was questioned. Did you see the Matt Cash one?
I did, yeah. I know exactly the one you're talking about, yeah.
And it's interesting to me where it's two completely different situations, very similar. One's deemed to be clearly a penalty, one's deemed not to be a penalty. And yet if you were to compare the two, then it just doesn't add up. Going back to the Melier one, again, I'm going to praise him for the fact that he's as positive as he is. And again, I thought he was generally very, very good in this game. It is just a fantastic finish. But I do think, as much as I back up goalkeepers on this occasion, I personally wouldn't have given a foul.
David James also said after the game that he loved what Meslier did today. He had the confidence to continue going for crosses. Great to see his teammates turn to congratulate him after the final whistle. And Nigel Martin also tweeted and said, people are asking me about Ilan Meslier. I think he's doing a tremendous job. Today is what being a goalie in the Premier League is all about. And he dealt with it all. He then put in a great picture. He said, for context, this is me at roughly the same age, Cornwall Senior Cup winners. And there's a picture of him many, many moons ago. But they're right, aren't they? And it's fair to Meslier. You said there that he does come for a lot. He's quite a brave goalkeeper. He did keep coming for everything. He didn't let that incident deter him.
That's exactly it. And look, you think about it. This is where we talk about this a lot on the podcast, where sometimes it's easier to do what's considered safe. You know, you see goalkeepers that overcover their near, that don't come for crosses, that just go long from goal kicks. So this is why I want to praise the likes of Meslier for playing the way he does, because he's on the front foot. I know we're going to talk about David Raya later on in the show as well. And again, similarly, I want to praise goalkeepers that are on the front foot, because you're so much more effective. Now, if you come for more crosses, you're going to drop some sometimes. Absolutely. And sometimes it's not even necessarily your fault, because in this situation, the moment he hits Ben Mee, is going to make it very difficult to catch the ball. Now, often he will catch it, which is why I believe it's the right decision, didn't quite execute. And more often than not, is that ball finished from that position where you're on the turn, on the half volley or side volley, sorry, and managing to put it into the roof of the net? It's a phenomenal finish. And that's the bit where it winds me up, that as much as I agree with people saying it's not a foul, I don't agree with those that have texted poor goalkeeping. I think it was Gary Lineker, wasn't it? I don't agree with that at all, because no, this is actually very positive goalkeeping. Yes, the ball's broke. That sometimes happens, and it is a phenomenal finish. And the fact that he carried on doing the right things after that moment is a great lesson to goalkeepers everywhere. Keep coming for your crosses, positive in all that you do. Sometimes it won't go your way, but over the period of a season, being that positive will have such a beneficial effect on those around you.
Okay, just a couple of other bits to finish on in the Premier League. We had a tweet in from Sean Cogman who said, unreal save, won't get the credit as the focus will be on the miss. Great strike, top save. He's referring to the save from Alphonse Areola from a James Ward-Prowse free kick. It did fall back into the path of Shay Adams, who somehow couldn't adjust his body to finish it off. But it was a very good save from Areola.
It was. Well, you know, I've watched this several times and I'm still yet to be 100% convinced that he gets the touch before it hits the post, or whether it's after the post back onto the glove. We're going to give him the benefit of the doubt, more so for the fact that for him to move where he was to get into that top corner in the speed at which he does, it's ridiculous. It is incredible the speed at which he's able to move and the explosive power that he has. And he's been an absolute joy to watch so far since he's been in the Premier League. I just love his style of goalkeeping. And it is interesting. We've seen several saves similar to this, it feels like, in the past few weeks. You know, we touched on the Nick Pope save and the Guaita save in particular. But this one, this is even more in the top corner. And once again, yeah, phenomenal goalkeeping.
And lastly, at Molineux, Rui Patricio, the opener from Tongi Ndombele. It was inside the opening minute in Spurs' draw at Wolves. No one really said anything about Patricio here. And often when that happens, sometimes I think, do we need to comment on it? But the whole point is to highlight, you know, both the good and the bad of goalkeeping. How did you take this particular goal?
Yeah, for me, very simple. He couldn't see it. It's as simple as that. So I watched it again and again. And if you watch the angle from behind the goal and it shows the moment the ball struck, he's got two players in the way. And again, if you kind of do it in slow motion, you see that he has effectively moved to his right in order to get a view of the ball. Then the moment he's moved to his right and he is able to see the ball, it's too late and it's down to his left. He tries to get himself back, but of course he's got no chance. And this is one of those, there's certain things with goalkeeping that people won't highlight. And this is one where often it looks like you've been beaten so easily, but if you can't see the ball, it's so frustrating because you're trying to find a way to see it. But often, you know, more often than not, by making that slight movement, you then don't give yourself a chance to react to make the save. Another good example for those that have played in stadiums will understand when the ball goes in the floodlight. It's another great example that goes in the floodlight, and sometimes you could be made to look so foolish because there's just nothing you can do. You just blinds you for that split second. Now, this is one of those situations where I just felt that he's lost sight of the ball. He's tried to move. The moment he sees the ball, it's too late.
Richard, the time hath cometh. Right, we are going to do a championship rundown of sorts this time. We're tweaking it slightly because there weren't as many games in the EFL. So it's going to be an all-encompassing EFL rundown to an extent where rather than you bleating out all the results one after the other in a mad couple of minutes, we're just going to go back and forth, okay?
Sounds good to me.
We'll start at Cardiff Brentford, where Brentford won 3-2. A fantastic hat-trick from Sergi Canos and a fantastic opener from Will Volks, the game's first shot on target. The commentator said David Raya went walkabout. A great strike, a great goal. Was David Raya in any way at fault here?
Again, this is because of the style he plays. So is it an error? Look, it's one that, of course, he's going to be disappointed with. Will it change what he does moving forward? Probably not. Like, look, we've seen it in the playoff final, and we've seen just how many times he's able to come and collect the ball because of his aggressive style. And this is how Brentford wanted to play. This is how he's comfortable playing. Now, if you watch the build-up, the reason that he gets done here is that he is very advanced. He is effectively part of the play, and it's because they lose the ball, and it's the speed at which they lose the ball and then the ball is struck. And because he's 30 yards from goal, of course, the ball is struck so quickly, he just simply can't get back. And he does actually try. As soon as they lose the ball, you see him retreat. And again, it's one of those moments for me that we do have to give credit to Volks, because it is a phenomenal strike. It's 70-odd yards. The pace, the trajectory, and the accuracy is incredible. And it's a 1-in-50 strike, you would feel. And the speed at which they're able to move the ball to him, and he's able to strike it. And ultimately, David Raya has absolutely no chance at that point. So as I say, unless he's going to completely change his style of goalkeeping, then no, this won't change moving forward. And I think there's far more positive that comes from this style than negative. So, you know, look, is it an error? Yes, it's one that he'll look at and won't be overly happy with. But he'll do the same thing again next time. And I've got no issue with that.
Okay, at the opposite end, Alex Smithies. Let's just touch on this. We said Sergi Canos got a hat trick. Now, the first and the third goal, I think that Smithies wasn't expecting what happened in both of those cases. For the second goal, Canos has cut in like he did for the third goal, but for the third, he chipped rather than drill like he did for the second goal. This is quite confusing what I'm saying. But he also went with two hands for the third as well. I don't think the second he could have done anything about. It was a very good goal. They were all very good goals. But what did you make of the first and the third?
Yeah, I mean, you make a good point. Now, as a rule of thumb, for a ball that's in the air, so the first ball, a ball that's in the air, ordinarily you'd suggest to a goalkeeper to be that little bit deeper, because the one risk you've always got is that the ball goes over your head. But you hit the nail on the head. He didn't expect this at all. And certainly from the position that Canos is in, you would not have expected the ball to do what it did and to fly over his head and just dip under the crossbar in the way that it did. So, yeah, look, in a perfect world, he'd have been half a yard deeper given that the ball was in the air. But just for that split second, not expecting this to happen, he has moved forward. And the moment that happens, then, yeah, he's got no chance in the end because of that. So, again, nitpicking, you might say, could he be half a yard deeper? But again, I do think we do need to give credit to Canos. It is a phenomenal strike. Now, the third one's a really interesting one for me because, again, I'm sure a lot of you goalkeepers listening in would have faced this, where it's one of those frustrating ones in that it's too high to catch, but also the fact there's no pace on the ball, it's quite tough to get the purchase you need to get in order to get it over the bar. So I've watched this 10 times and I don't know what you do in this situation. Now, is it one where he could move his feet a little bit more and maybe get a palm over the bar, potentially? Is it one that if he doesn't touch at all, that nobody says anything and just credits it as a fantastic chip? Maybe. But what he's ended up doing is he has tried to catch it, but it's ever so slightly out of reach. And it's one of those horrible ones that's kind of grazed his fingers and just dropped over the goal line. But because there's no pace, I still cannot figure out what would be the best way to approach this situation. And again, if you guys get any thoughts on this, do let us know. You can get in touch, obviously, on Twitter and let us know, because it's one of those real funny ones that you don't see that often. It's a frustrating one, and it's one that Alex Smithies no doubt will hold his hands up and say, yeah, I should have done better. But again, what is it that you do better? What is it that a goalkeeper would do in this situation next time if faced with it? And to be honest, this is one that stumped me a little bit.
Okay, at the Kai and Prince Foundation Stadium, Swansea with another victory away from home, and Freddie Woodman with another clean sheet this season, his 12th of the season. A very good tip over from the bar from Macaulay Bond in that one. And speaking of clean sheets, Stoke and Coventry, another goalless draw for Stoke and another clean sheet for Joe Bursic. That is six clean sheets away on the bounce for Stoke now. That is a club record. In the last eight games that Bursic has played, he's kept seven clean sheets conceded just two. And also to give a bit of love to Ben Wilson as well, who's come in for Marco Morosi, just 1-6 conceded by Coventry at home. He's doing a good job, isn't he? And when Morosi gets fit again, and he tweeted recently a picture of a mask that he's going to be wearing when he's back in the side, it's going to be tough to displace Ben Wilson. Mark Robbins is going to have quite a decision on his hands.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. You're right. I mean, from all the footage that we've seen, it looks like he hasn't put a foot wrong to date. You mentioned Joe Bursic. Once again, very, very accomplished performance, just without necessarily having loads of saves to make. But it's just the fact that he's another one of these goalkeepers that's so quick off their line, incredible distributor of the ball. And again, it's a very mature performance, coming from many crosses, coming from many through balls, cutting a lot of things out of source. It's the kind of game that you'd expect from a goalkeeper much older than him, of course, only 20 years old. So, yeah, huge credit to him. Very, very good.
Into League One, Andrew Fisher with a decent triple save against Bristol Rovers and a decent double save by Jack Stevens in Oxford United's win over AFC Wimbledon. 16 efforts from AFC Wimbledon in this one, but a great double save from Stevens. First saving from Ethan Chislett and then the follow-up from Callum Riley. Decent stuff from Stevens.
Yeah, no, he was excellent. It wasn't actually just the double save. You mentioned the double save, which was brilliant. You know, came out, spread very well, got a really good technique on the spread, moved back very quickly to then get up to his left and tip it over. Really good save. There were several saves after that as well. A good one down to his left, a great one with his foot around the post. And that's 4 clean sheets in 5 for him now. So he's really making a name for himself there.
Yep, that's 4 clean sheets in 5 for Stevens, now doing very well since he came into the team. And just speaking of that double save, we've got the man himself to talk us through it right now.
Yeah, as I remember, the lads cut inside and threaded a nice through ball to the striker. I think a lot of the lads thought it might have been offside. I've come off my line to try and narrow the angle down, and yeah, sort of met him with a block or spread save, tried to make myself as big as possible, and the ball's actually hit me in the face, rebounded out wide. Unfortunately, the winger was unmarked and he's seen the goals open for him and he's had a go, and thankfully I recovered quickly and managed to dive full stretch and my top hand tipped it over the bar for the corner, and thankfully we kept our lead. Going into half-time, it was probably a big moment in the game. A save like that probably doesn't come round too often. We do it a lot in training. Yeah, it was nice to be able to pull that off.
And finishing in League 2, Luke McGee with another good save for Forest Green Rovers in their draw with Exeter City. Quite an unorthodox tip away, I'm going to say, from Ryan Bowman.
Yeah, it was. It was really unorthodox because it was one of those where he realised he couldn't come for the cross and the ball's awkwardly looped over him, but it looked like it had beaten him. And then somehow he's almost turned round facing the other way. And it was the improvisation that I really appreciated in this save. Turning round the wrong way, didn't know what to do, but had the awareness in order to swat it effectively away from danger. And this for me typifies goalkeeping, that it's not always textbook. It's not always black and white. And sometimes you need the speed of thought and need to think outside the box in the way that he did here.
Okay, Richard, nearly at the end. I did say earlier on that we were going to be talking about Arsenal goalkeepers and specifically Alex Runnison, who came in for that Carabao Cup quarter-final tie for Arsenal against Manchester City and let a Riyad Mahrez free kick slip through his fingers, City running out convincing winners in that particular game. But after the game is what we want to talk more about, because Runnison came in for a lot of stick on social media. He's since deleted his account on Twitter. This is a young goalkeeper who's come into the Premier League, is now Arsenal's number 2. This is quite simply disgraceful, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Look, it's an interesting situation because, again, there are stories that surround every team. And, of course, one of the big stories this summer was that Martinez went to Villa. Now, we touched on Leno earlier in the show and the fact that then that puts a little bit of added pressure on him. And, of course, it's going to put pressure on the person that replaces him. Because Martinez, let's be straight about this. What he did at the back end of last season was phenomenal. You know, no one knew him. Very few people knew him, I should say, at the start of the year. Then all of a sudden, his rise to fame was incredible. Winning the trophies in the way that they did, being sold for a lot of money, and then continuing that form at Villa. Of course, that's going to put a bit of pressure, or pressure in the eyes of fans and people around the club, on the two that are still left there. Now, unfortunately, this was one of those where it was one of those nights, not a particularly nice night. The weather wasn't particularly nice, et cetera, et cetera. It wasn't great conditions for goalkeeping. And this particular moment was one of them, which was, it was a difficult moment. I'm going to touch on the wall first and foremost. I do think that maybe he had one too many in the wall. He'd taken up a position that was slightly too far over. In the end, that was slightly irrelevant because, of course, the ball does go down his throat. Now, he's tried to catch, which credit to him that he's tried to catch. What I would say is that given the conditions, might it have been easier to have gone for a big parry? Now, of course, people would have said, and no doubt the commentators would have said, why didn't you just catch it when it was right down his throat? But I just feel that sometimes you adapt your game ever so slightly based on the conditions. And in this moment, of course, he's tried to catch it. It's one of the most difficult things to do that W technique around your chest when it's wet, windy and greasy. And unfortunately, it squirmed through. And from that moment, given that it was a heavy defeat, of course, he was always going to be the person who got blamed for it. So look, from a human point of view and a human aspect, I do feel for him because we've all been there and it's horrible. And certain people, they don't care what they say. They're very happy to get on social media and spread hate. And unfortunately, it has affected him. The fact that he has deleted social media is disappointing because to have that voice and be able to use the platform for good is what we want it for and what the players want ordinarily to have. But if he felt that that wasn't possible or isn't possible now, then hopefully this is just a short-term thing. He does come back on social media because, again, I think everybody loves to have that insight that a lot of the professionals give us. But at the same time, I fully understand it. Sometimes, as much as you might not know the person giving you stick, there's still something. The moment you read that tweet, the moment you read that message on Instagram, it hits you, of course. And before you can logically think about it, you will have a certain feeling associated with that. So if he's seeing tirades of abuse coming through, then I'm not surprised. Sometimes it is just an easier thing just to switch off, log out, focus on your football, keep your head down and stay in your little bubble, which ultimately isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Just your thoughts on the free kick itself, because after the game, Riyad Mahrez did say that he was quite surprised at Runarsson's positioning before he took the free kick. We had a tweet in as well from Edison the Gourd, who asked about Runar's setup and what you think of that. What did you make of the fact that Runarsson did seem to be so far over? He was almost touching the post, wasn't he?
I always sort of stand by my belief when it comes to free kicks, which personally, I never have more than four on a charger. Now, I know some people would say five on a charger if they're right on the edge of the box, but I just feel that even four on a charger, if they're at the edge of the box, you can take up a position that's ever so slightly off center. You can still get to anything your side, but it does give you half a chance to then get to the ball that goes over the wall. Now, as I mentioned, that all being said, it was irrelevant because ultimately the ball did go his side. It was a very strange choice by Mahrez, you could argue, to actually go his side given the setup. But also, I think Mahrez, he's not stupid. Like, he will have seen the conditions, known the situation. If you put it the goalkeeper's side with enough pace and the goalkeeper decides to try and catch, then of course there's a huge risk to doing that. You know, there's an argument to be said that maybe he could have gone with the technique, the sort of pat down technique that we saw the likes of Peter Schmeichel use so effectively over the years. Or for me, the other one is just the big firm parry away. And again, this is where those that have true goalkeeping understanding would instantly say, I understand why you've done that, because it is a difficult ball to face when it's at pace, chest height. Again, I touched on the conditions. They do change the game slightly. So for me, it was just a decision-making one. I think personally, if he'd gone for a parry, it would have been a bit safer.
Just to finish on this, after the game, when they were analysing Runarsson's performance, Jamie Redknapp said, goalkeepers don't need to rest. Now, he's alluding to the fact that he thought Bernd Leno should have been playing in this game. This caused quite a stir on Twitter. I'm going to read some of the responses that we had to that particular comment, and then Richard, come to you for your opinion. Fraser Oliver said, mate, I need 5 days to recover after 90 minutes of goal kicks. Patrick said, I'm lost for words. James Redfern said, physically, not really. Mental rest, yes. Blackie said that he agreed with Jamie Redknapp. JK said, nah, it's mental fatigue and also just chucking yourself around surely would take its toll 2 games a week. NHL shows this with how they treat their netminders. Charlie Mann said, totally get where you are going with this. Very suspect punditry. I don't think it's a black and white issue. Some goalkeepers thrive on playing every game and find being left out disrupts their rhythm. Other goalkeepers find that playing too much can be overwhelming. Sinquid said, goalkeepers definitely need rest. Physically, you may not be expending lots of energy, but the concentration required in each game is extremely high and you therefore require rest from time to time. Gavin Heath said, for me, it depends on the goalkeeper. Some goalkeepers need to play regular to keep sharpness and a break can hinder their form. others welcome a rest and are unaffected. I'm all for giving opportunities to second choice goalkeepers, but perhaps not in a quarter final. Toby VM says mentally keepers defo need a rest. Of course, it's not as physically draining, but mental preparation and delivery in addition to travel is still there. Donna Millington says disagree and disappointed with that comment. Clearly someone who has never stood between the sticks or completed a goalkeeper training session. Two more. David Turner says goalkeepers should play every game if possible. Imagine telling Brucey or Big Nev they need a rest. And Dave Bassett, not the Dave Bassett, I don't think, says if in bad form, yes. If flying in all competitions and this is an important priority, yes. If manager is under pressure, no. If it's a cup quarter final, no.
Yeah, look, some really interesting comments there. And firstly, I would say that I agree with a lot of the comments in regards to Jamie Redknapp. Ultimately, he's not qualified to give that opinion. It's as simple as that. Secondly, I'm on the side of, I think it depends on the individual. Look, there's a few things to consider here that maybe haven't been considered. One of them is actually the training regime. Because, of course, when you've got two games a week, and I've gone through spells in my career where it is Saturday, Tuesday. And ultimately, all you're really doing is preparing for the next game, is sleeping, eating, and doing some very basic training. Now, what can happen is, for some goalkeepers, they love that, and that's perfect. For others, me included, I wanted every now and then to have a week where I had a Saturday, so I could do a real heavy session on a Monday, Tuesday, and work on the power. Because, of course, if all you're doing is just technical work and you're not necessarily doing the other side of the game, you can start to feel that some of your sharpness just goes a little bit. Because in a game itself, how much do you actually have to do? What, three or four saves? A load of kicks? Like, you do so much more in a training session than you'd ever do in a game. So that was a big thing for me, and why every now and then, if there was a JPT, check a trade, or what's it called now? Pepper John's, I think it is. If there's one of those games, and this is going to sound a bit disrespectful to that competition, but if I was playing regularly in the league, and of course, 46 games a season in League One, then it might be, if the manager said to me, look, would you rather play that game or not? More often than not, I'd say, look, I'm okay. I'd rather get a really good week's training in. Now, of course, this is slightly different because it is a quarterfinal, and there are other things that are at stake here. So did he make the right decision in playing him? Well, only Mikel Arteta knows that. He must have had such faith in Runnison, and he must have seen something in training and seen enough to make him believe that he could step in and there'll be very little difference. Unfortunately, it didn't quite go his way on the night. So naturally, it's very easy to look at it and comment afterwards that it wasn't the right decision. Now, had he gone out and had a man of the match performance and then a 1-1 nil, then we'd all be singing his praises and, of course, saying that he's ready to step in when needed. But as I say, unfortunately, that wasn't the case.
Okay, Richard, thank you. This has been over the medium of Zoom. I think it's fair to say that neither of us particularly prefer doing it like this. Cannot wait to be back in those studios. But before we go, were you, Richard, one of the 160 goalkeepers that received one of the 644 personalised bottles that Budweiser sent out to commemorate the goals that Lionel Messi has scored in his career for Barcelona?
I wasn't, unfortunately. Never had the pleasure of playing against Lionel Messi. Did get the pleasure of playing against Ronaldo, which I think I've mentioned once or twice on this
just podcast. Just a few times.
So I'm kind of hoping they do something similar for that, because I think that would be a really nice keepsake. It's a very clever, by the way, brilliant marketing. I know certain people have seen this slightly differently, but I think it's very, very clever marketing. And you can see a lot of the goalkeepers that have received the bottles, Buffon being a great example, that have put posts up on social media. And I think most people have seen it, have taken it very lightheartedly, I would say. So, no, really clever campaign.
Okay, Richard, thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away!